Chapter 9. Playmate. How senseless of me. Apostrophe he said, as he lay in his lonely bed. As he had been another man's wife almost the whole time, since he was estranged from her, and now she was a corpse. Yet the absurdity did not make his grief the less. And the consciousness of the intrinsic, almost radiant, purity of this new-sprung affection for a flown spirit forbade him to check it. The flesh was absent altogether. It was love rarefied and refined to its highest adder. He had felt nothing like it before. The next afternoon he went down to the club. Not his large club, where the men hardly spoke to each other, but the homely one, where they told stories of an afternoon, and were not ashamed to confess among themselves to personal weaknesses and follies, knowing well that such secrets would go no further. But he could not tell this. So volatile and intangible was the story, that to convey it in words would have been as hard as to cage a perfume. They observed his altered manner, and said he was in love. Pearson admitted that he was, and there it ended. When he reached home he looked out of his bedroom window, and began to consider in what direction from where he stood that darling little figure lay. It was straight across there, under the young pale moon. The symbol signified well. The divinity of the silver bow was not more excellently pure than she, the lost, had been. Under that moon, was the island of ancient slingers, and on the island a house, framed from mullions to chimney top like the isle itself, of stone. Inside the window, the moonlight irradiating her winding sheet, lay of ice, reached only by the faint noises inherent in the isle, the tink-tink of the chisels in the quarries, the surging of the tides in the bay, and the muffled grumbling of the currents in the never-pacified race. He began to divine the truth. A vice, the departed one, though as he had come short of inspiring a passion, had yet possessed a ground quality absent from her rivals, without which it seemed that a fixed and full-rounded constancy to a woman could not flourish in him. Like his own, her family had been islanders for centuries from Norman, Anglian, Roman, Balearic British times. Hence in her nature, as in his, was some mysterious ingredient sucked from the isle, otherwise a racial instinct necessary to the absolute unison of a pair. Thus, though he might never love a woman of the island race, for lack in her of the desired refinement, he could not love long a Kimberlin a woman other than of the island race, for her lack of this groundwork of character. Such was Pearson's view of things. Another fancy of his, an artist's superstition merely, may be mentioned. The Carrows, like some other local families, suggested a Roman lineage, more or less grafted on the stock of the slingers. Their features recalled those of the Italian peasantry to anyone as familiar as he was with them, and there were evidences that the Roman colonists had been populous and long abiding in and near this corner of Britain. Tradition urged that a temple to Venus once stood at the top of the Roman road leading up into the isle, and possibly one to the love goddess of the slingers antedated this. What so natural as that the true star of his soul would be found nowhere but in one of the old island breed? After dinner his old friend Summers came in to smoke, and when they had talked a little while Summers alluded casually to some place at which they would meet on the morrow. I shan't be there, apostrophe said Pearson. But you promised? Apostrophe, yes. But I shall be at the island looking at a dead woman's grave. Apostrophe as he spoke his eyes turned, and remained fixed on a table near. Summers followed the direction of his glance to a photograph on a stand. Is that she? Apostrophe, he asked. Yes. Apostrophe, rather a bygone affair, then. Apostrophe, Pearson acknowledged it. She's the only sweetheart I ever slighted, Alfred, apostrophe he said. Because she's the only one I ought to have cared for. That's just the fool I have always been. Apostrophe, but if she's dead and buried, you can go to her grave at any time as well as now, to keep up the sentiment. Apostrophe, I don't know that she's buried. Apostrophe, but tomorrow the Academy night. Of all days, why go then? Apostrophe, I don't care about the academy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Pearson, you are our only inspired sculptor. You are our Praxiteles, or rather our Lysippus. You are almost the only man of this generation who has been able to mold and chisel forms living enough to draw the idle public away from the popular paintings into the usually deserted lecture room, and people who have seen your last pieces of stuff say there has been nothing like them since 1600, and since the sculptors of the great race lived and died whenever that was. Well, then, for the sake of others, you ought not to rush off to that god-forgotten sea rock, just when you are wanted in town, all for a woman you last saw 100 years ago. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, it was only 19¾, apostrophe, replied his friend, with abstracted literalness. He went the next morning. Since the days of his youth, a railway had been constructed along the pebble bank, so that, except when the rails were washed away by the tides, which was rather often, the peninsula was quickly accessible. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he was rattled along by this new means of locomotion, under the familiar monotonous line of brand-colored stones, and he soon emerged from the station, which stood as a strange exotic among the black lairds, the ruins of the washed-away village, and the white cubes of oolite, just come to view after burial through unreckonable geologic years. In entering upon the pebble beach, the train had passed close to the ruins of Henry VIII's or Sandsfoot Castle, whither a vice was to have accompanied him on the night of his departure. Had she appeared, the primitive betrothal, with its natural result, would probably have taken place, and, as no islander had ever been known to break that compact, she would have become his wife. Ascending the steep incline to where the quarrymen were chipping just as they had formerly done, and within sound of the great stone saws, he looked southward towards the Beal. The level line of the sea horizon rose above the surface of the isle, a ruffled patch in mid-distance as usual marking the race, whence many Lycidas had gone, visiting the bottom of the monstrous world, apostrophe, but had not been blessed with a poet as a friend. Against the stretch of water, where a school of mackerel twinkled in the afternoon light, was defined, in addition to the distant lighthouse, a church with its tower, standing about a quarter of a mile off, near the edge of the cliff. The churchyard gravestones could be seen in profile against the same vast spread of watery babble and unrest. Among the graves, moved the form of a man clothed in a white sheet, which the wind blew and flapped coldly every now and then. Near him moved 6 men bearing a long box, and 2 or 3 persons in black followed. The coffin, with its 12 legs, crawled across the aisle, while around and beneath it the flashing lights from the sea and the school of mackerel were reflected. A fishing boat, far out in the channel, being momentarily discernible under the coffin also. The procession wandered round to a particular corner, and halted, and paused there a long, while in the wind, the sea behind them, the surplice of the priest still blowing. Jocelyn stood with his hat off. He was present, though he was a quarter of a mile off, and he seemed to hear the words that were being said, though nothing but the wind was audible. He instinctively knew that it was none other than a vice whom he was seeing entered. His vice, as he now began presumptuously to call her. Presently the little group withdrew from before the sea shine, and disappeared. He felt himself unable to go further in that direction, and turning aside went aimlessly across the open land, visiting the various spots that he had formerly visited with her. But, as if tethered to the churchyard by a cord, he was still conscious of being at the end of a radius whose pivot was the grave of a vicario, and as the dusk thickened he closed upon his center, and entered the churchyard gate. Not a soul was now within the precincts. The grave, newly shaped, was easily discoverable behind the church, and when the same young moon arose which he had observed the previous evening from his window in London, he could see the yet fresh footmarks of the mourners and bearers. The breeze had fallen to a calm with the setting of the sun. The lighthouse had opened its glaring eye, and, disinclined to leave a spot sublime both by early association and present regret, he moved back to the church wall, warm from the afternoon sun, and sat down upon the windowsill facing the grave. 2. 4. She threatens to resume corporeal substance. The lispings of the sea beneath the cliffs were all the sounds that reached him, for the quarries were silent now. How long he sat here lonely and thinking he did not know. Neither did he know, though he felt drowsy, whether in expectant sadness, that gentle soporific lulled him into a short sleep, so that he lost count of time and consciousness of incident. But during some minute or minutes he seemed to see a vice caro herself, bending over and then withdrawing from her grave in the light of the moon. She seemed not a year older, not a digit less slender, not a line more angular, than when he had parted from her 20 years earlier, in the lane hard by. A renascent reasoning on the impossibility of such a phenomenon as this being more than a dream fancy roused him with a start from his heaviness. I must have been asleep, apostrophe he said. Yet as he had seemed so real. Pearson, however, dismissed the strange impression, arguing that even if the information sent him of a vice's death should be false, a thing incredible, that sweet friend of his youth, despite the transfiguring effects of moonlight, would not now look the same as he had appeared 19 or 20 years ago. Were what he saw substantial flesh, it must have been some other person than the vice caro. Having satisfied his sentiment, by coming to the gravesite there was nothing more for him to do in the island, and he decided to return to London that night. But some time remaining still on his hands, Jocelyn by a natural instinct turned his feet in the direction of East Quarriers, the village of his birth and of hers. Passing the market square he pursued the arm of road to Sylvania Castle, apostrophe a private mansion of comparatively modern date, in whose grounds stood the single plantation of trees, of which the isle could boast. The cottages extended close to the walls of the enclosure, and one of the last of these dwellings had been the vice's, in which, as it was her freehold, she possibly had died. To reach it, he passed the gates of Sylvania, apostrophe and observed above the lawn wall a board announcing that the house was to be let furnished. A few steps further revealed the cottage which with its quaint and massive stone features of 2 or 3 centuries antiquity, was capable even now of longer resistance to the rasp of time than ordinary new erections. His attention was drawn to the window, still unblinded, though a lamp lit the room. He stepped back against the wall opposite, and gazed in. At a table covered with a white cloth a young woman stood putting tea things away into a corner cupboard. She was in all respects the vice he had lost, the girl he had seen in the churchyard, and had fancied to be the illusion of a dream. And though there was this time no doubt about her reality, the isolation of her position in the silent house lent her a curiously startling aspect. Divining the explanation he waited for footsteps, and in a few moments a quarryman passed him on his journey home. Pearson inquired of the man concerning the spectacle. Oh yes, sir, that's poor Mrs. Carroll's only daughter, and it must be lonely for her there tonight, poor maid. Yes, good now, she's the very depths of her mother, that's what everybody says. Apostrophe apostrophe, but how does she come to be so lonely? Apostrophe apostrophe, one of her brothers went to sea and was drowned, and t'other is in America. Apostrophe apostrophe, they were quarryers at one time. Apostrophe apostrophe, the quarryman pitched his niche, apostrophe and explained to the seeming stranger that there had been 3 families thereabouts in the stone trade, who had got much involved with each other in the last generation. They were the Bencombes, the Pearstons, and the Carrows. The Bencombes strained their utmost to outlive the other 2, and partially succeeded. They grew enormously rich, sold out, and disappeared altogether from the island which had been their making. The Pearstons kept a dogged middle course, throve without show or noise, and also retired in their turn. The Carrows were pulled completely down in the competition with the other two, and when Widow Carrow's daughter married her cousin Jim Carrow, he tried to regain for the family its original place in the three-cornered struggle. He took contracts at less than he could profit by, speculated more and more, till at last the crash came. He was sold up, went away, and later on came back, to live in this little cottage, which was his wife's by inheritance. There he remained till his death, and now his widow was gone. Hardships had helped on her end. The quarryman proceeded on his way, and Pearson, deeply remorseful, knocked at the door of the Minute Freehold. The girl herself opened it, lamp in hand. A vice. Apostrophe apostrophe he said tenderly. A vice Carrow. Apostrophe even now unable to get over the strange feeling that he was 20 years younger, addressing a vice the forsaken. Anne, sir, apostrophe said she. Ah, your name is not the same as your mother's. Apostrophe apostrophe, my second name is. And my surname. Poor mother married her cousin. Apostrophe, as everybody does here. Dot 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 well, Anne or otherwise, you are a vice to me. And you have lost her now? Apostrophe, I have, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she spoke in the very same sweet voice that he had listened to a score of years before, and bent eyes of the same familiar hazel inquiringly upon him. I knew your mother at one time, apostrophe, he said, and learning of her death and burial I took the liberty of calling upon you. You will forgive a stranger doing that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, she said dispassionately, and glancing round the room. This was mother's own house, and now it is mine. I am sorry not to be in mourning on the night of her funeral, but I have just been to put some flowers on her grave, and I took it off afore going, that the damp mid not spoil the crape. You see, she was bad a long time, and I have to be careful, and do washing, and ironing for a living. She heard her side with ringing up the large sheets as he had to wash for the castle folks here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I hope you won't hurt yourself doing it, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no, that I shan't. There's Charles Woollett, and Sammy Scribben, and Ted Gipsy, and lots o' young chaps. They'll ring anything for me, if they happen to come along. But I can hardly trust them. Sam Scribben. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.